WTAW News Time is 8:05. It's 46 degrees right now at the studios. We'll take a look at your forecast coming up after the news, brought to you by Pioneer Steel and Pipe, your one-stop steel supply store on Highway 21 East in Bryan. Go to pioneerboys.com. Good morning, I'm Patrick Zeinert. On the eve of today's Texas A&M System Board of Regents meeting comes the announcement of eliminating non-faculty positions on the flagship campus. Interim President Mark Hussey says more than $8 million will be transferred to what he called the university's core mission of teaching, research, and engagement and outreach. System Chancellor John Sharp, who teased the Faculty Senate earlier this week about Hussey's announcement, says this keeps A&M the most efficient state agency.
Remember the legislature and say, we are the most efficient. You want your money to be trusted to the very best there is, the most, the folks that respect your money the most, that's Texas A&M.
A memo sent by Dr. Hussey to top administrators and deans also outlined what was described as strict procedures for filling any requested non-faculty positions in the future. New legislation has been designed by the state's Task Force for Infectious Disease Preparedness and Response to increase Texas's level of preparedness in responding to infectious disease threats.
The legislation was developed in response to the Ebola outbreak in Dallas last year.
This emergency highlighted needs for profound changes in our training, in our preparedness, our protocols, and even the structure and power of our local and state officials in terms of their ability to respond to the crisis.
Texas A&M Health Science Center CEO Brett Jouard, who heads the task force, says the bill includes provisions enabling the governor to declare a state of infectious disease emergency, to increase the protectiveness of emergency responders, and to enable state health authorities to stop a transportation carrier.
There is also the granting of the state's chief physician the ability, under very specific protections and standards, to issue a control order that is enforceable before it is violated.
Dr. Jouard says under current law, the state's chief physician can issue a control order for a potentially exposed or infectious person to stay in their home, but the control order cannot be enforced until the person breaks it. He says this issue was a critical part of the task force that was highlighted during the recent outbreak. Chelsea Reber, News Talk 1620, WTAW.
Bryan police has made four arrests from three convenience store robberies last month. The latest are two Bryan men who share an apartment across Sandy Point Road from the Brazos County Jail. 18-year-old William Dates and 20-year-old Jonathan Lett are accused of participating in the holdups at Palisoda Grocery. Lett is also arrested along with a 16-year-old for a holdup at Sodalax Grocery. A 16- and 17-year-old were arrested last month, and investigators say additional charges may be filed on all four. Door-to-door salesmen acting suspiciously led to a visit from Bryan police.
We've received a couple of complaints regarding door-to-door salesmen and just, acting a little off, the person's felt uncomfortable with them, contacting them. So on February 10th, our officers went to the area. We contacted a group of individuals who were selling magazines, and they did not have a permit.
Officer Kelly McKeithen says the solicitors have still not applied for a city permit. This is among several recent complaints, which led to a police advisory of what to do and not to do if you're approached. Online at WTAW.com is a list from police. McKeithen says if you don't want to deal with solicitors, that won't go away. Call police immediately. WTAW News Time is 8:08. It's 46 degrees. This look at news brought to you by Pioneer Steel and Pipe. We've got more news at 8:30 or anytime at WTAW.com. I'm Patrick Zeinert, News Talk 1620, WTAW.
As the Brazos Valley's largest supplier of metal building components, pipe, and steel, Pioneer stocks a complete line of metal building and carport packages, from structural framework like I-beam and square tubing to sheet metal, trim packages, roll-up doors, and insulation. Pioneer is your one-stop shop. Metal buildings and carports are Pioneer Steel's specialty. Pioneer Steel, Highway 21 East. Call 979-589-2333. Or on the web at pioneerboys.com.
This is Thomas with BCS Tires and Lifts. Your tires are one of the most important safety features of your vehicle. When the rubber meets the road, not all tires are created equal. At BCS Tires, we have the tires that fit your personal lifestyle. The pros at BCS Tires know what tires fit your needs, whether your kids are in the car with you or you're out on the farm with your friends. We won't nickel and dime you. As always, free air checks and free rotations. Any car, anytime, BCS Tires and Lifts. We're on Texas Avenue next to Copy Corner or at bcstirepros.com. Give us your keys, put your mind at ease.
News Talk 1620 WTAW. Let's do some weather. It's brought to you this morning by United Roofing and Sheet Metal, home of the Duralast Roof System, world's best roof. Give them a call at 268-ROOF. Go to unitedroofingpros.com.
Cooler temperatures have arrived across the area along with some cloudiness. That cloudiness should move out. We'll see some sunshine develop. Temperatures today making their way up only to about 55 to 60. It'll be clear to partly cloudy overnight. Lows will be down to 35 to 40. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high close to 60. Clear skies tomorrow night. Lows will be 45 to 50 degrees. We'll have sunny weather and warmer conditions by Saturday. Highs up around 70. I'm meteorologist Rob Carolyn for News Talk 1620 WTAW.
There you go. It's 8:10. We had a scheduling snafu. That was on us that Charles Schwertner won't join us today. We will endeavor to have him on tomorrow morning, but we got to back up. So. Okay, to back up for the state senator, Tommy Wallace, Dr. Tommy Wallace here. Superintendent of Bryan Schools, how are you today?
I am great. I'm glad I can be second team today.
Well, you were going to be in here anyway. We're just kind of shifting dominoes around, so we'll do that. Let's start, first of all, just kind of to catch people up. Of course, the legislature has not been able to successfully solve school financing. They've fought with it. They had it in the courts. Well, I don't know if it's a life raft for them or not, but the Supreme Court says now we're going to take a look at it. So this legislature is not going to have to take on public education at all during this session. As a superintendent in Texas, how does that make you feel?
Well, it's frustrating, Scott. It really is because, you know, with the funding formula that's out there, nobody understands it. You can go to Austin and you can ask questions, and the people that craft the laws, I don't think they understand it when you ask them questions. School funding is a source of a subject across the state of Texas. The last session, Bryan received $5 million more than they received 2 years ago, and then the second year. So we got $8 million more than we had the previous session, but that's still less than the previous biennium. So when you ask them about equitability and you ask them about funding formulas, there's really not an answer. Nobody can give you a definitive answer. We don't know. Here we are. We're starting the session today. We're in it right now. And we're trying to form a budget for next school year to bring to the school board. And we don't have any idea and no inclination as to how much we're going to get, what we're going to be cut, we don't know. So it's always shooting in the dark and trying to hit a moving target in the dark. We don't know what that number is. And so it makes it very difficult to hire. It makes it difficult to talk about programming when you don't know the funding that you're going to have for the upcoming school year, and here we are in February.
Now, Clark Ely had said he was with us a couple of weeks ago, and of course the legislature patted themselves on the back, and they said, well, no, we came back and we gave you some of the money back from that shortfall. Now, what happened in the case of College Station is they got about 19 cents on the dollar back. How did Bryan make out in that?
Well, we didn't break it down by the dollar. We just looked at it from a standpoint of in that session. That 2 years, that buy-in, we received $8 million more, which was still less than our previous session. So we haven't broken down by the dollar, but it was still less.
Now, by the same token, you're in the dark, but they're also going to want you to be doing some more things. Pre-K is one of those.
Yes, sir.
Tell me how that would impact BISD.
Well, if we knew the entire law and actually saw the language, I could give you a better answer, but I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about this pre-K Bill 1100, House Bill 1100, what it is. Governor Abbott has come in with, and we do applaud the governor on this, which is he has a early childhood agenda, which is get the child prepared in pre-K, kinder, first, and second before they get into the high stakes testing in third grade, and we applaud that in public ed. But he did start this conversation about House Bill 1100, where it talks about pre-K all day. Now, we and Bryan are 100% behind that legislation, depending upon what the language is in that bill, because what it really says and all the abstracts, the governor wants pre-K funded all day long if you meet the stipulations that the governor says that he wants done. We don't know what those stipulations are. So while we and Bryan would encourage and we want House Bill 1100 to pass, depending upon the stipulations, because it could be more testing, it could be more mandates on certain things. You're going to use a certain type of textbook. You're going to serve a certain type of assessment. We don't know what that is. Currently, we're half day. And so what happens is a child comes in, and remember, if you qualify for pre-K, you're economically disadvantaged, and you're really struggling at the time. A half-day pre-K, these kids come in and they work roughly 90, 120 minutes a day on academics, and then we feed them. They have a PE requirement, and then it's time for them to go home. So 120 minutes a day doesn't get a child who's a little bit behind up. So we're for all-day pre-K, depending upon what these requirements are. And so we've heard Governor Abbott speak, and he says, we're for all-day pre-K if you do X, Y, and Z. We just don't know what X, Y, and Z are right now.
Well, and in hard numbers, we're talking a large population in Bryan.
Oh, large population. And you think about it, if we were to go full-day pre-K, and going back to your previous question, which is funding, we would have to double our pre-K staff to meet the needs of our students in Bryan ISD. Well, if we don't know how you're going to fund it, and we don't know what the stipulations are, we can't staff for pre-K full-day. And so, again, we're shooting in the dark, and so it's a total guess. And so it makes it difficult on school districts.
For a second, then, just to one more thing in this, from a facility standpoint. Now, are those facilities purposed in a different way in the afternoons right now? And then if you ended up with all-day pre-K, then those facilities are going to have to be repurposed for that all day long.
Yes, what you have is, for pre-K students, they have the little toilets. They have the little sinks. If we were to go full-day pre-K, then, of course, then you would have to retrofit other classes that aren't retrofitted for pre-K, and you have to put the little potties in, you have to put the little sinks, and so that's another financial issue. So it's a whole lot of not knowing, and then we're trying to prepare right now, because here we are in February, when we start budget right now for the following school year.
This is what we call unintended consequences right there. you've got a lieutenant governor who is pro-voucher. He's made no bones about that at all. So as you, as a superintendent for a public school district in Texas, what's the future as far as vouchers in public school, and what does that do to you?
Well, I'm 100% not vouchers. So
surprise.
Yes. You know, what you see are these bills that are coming from the Senate is where it seems like they're all originating. It does come from Dan Patrick. He has been pro-vouchers even when he was in the Senate. Voucher bills and the money following the child has been a topic for years. It's going to the federal level at this point. There's a lot of people, a lot of traction going that public schools are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and I completely disagree when we talk about the rigor and the that we're having, like for math, we talked about earlier. We're doing a great job in public education, but this idea of the money following the child, it can go to anyone. You could open up a homeschool. I could open up a homeschool. I could open up a charter, and the money follows that child. But there's no talk about accountability for where this money is going in these charter schools, these parochial schools. Are you going to do the same test that public schools have to take? Are you going to take the same STAR exam? Are you going to have to be required to go pick up special needs students? Are you going to be required to do dyslexia? Are you going to be required to serve the special needs students? Are you going to be required to go pick them up in transportation like we have to? What are you going to do? What's the accountability for these vouchers? And nobody has ever talked about that. And so what you hear is money follows the child, money follows the child. Okay, but what's the accountability? Because when you talk about Texas public education, all you hear about is we want more accountability, we want more accountability. So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek conversation. If the money follows the child to a homeschool, a charter school, parochial school, where's the accountability? And they say, you know, the argument is, well, private schools are doing just as good, if not better, than public schools. Well, they don't take the same assessments we take. They're not held to the same standard that we are in terms of truancy. You know, the education code talks about a student in public school has to attend 90% of the time that the school day is offered. Well, let's play by the same set of rules, and then we'll see.
Can education be a consumer-driven market?
Oh, I think it can be, yes.
Under what circumstances? How can we do that?
I think it's going to go back to that whole voucher thing. If there is a situation where we're all playing by the same set of rules, until that comes, then no, it really can't be. It's not an equitable system.
Okay, let's talk Common Core for a minute. There's a handful of states, literally, not many at all, that are not Common Core states. Texas is not one. It seems to be clear. Of course, Governor Perry used that as a real talking point against this Washington administration. It appears that Greg Abbott feels the same way. I want to try to understand what are the different standards? How is the standardized test that we have in Texas, how is that different from what Common Core is?
Well, I've not studied it a great deal in the fact that they've said from the very beginning we're not doing it. So we've got.
But don't you need to know what the other?
Well, and I do. But when I say I haven't studied it enough, I don't. I'm not an expert on the Common Core. The thing that the federal government seems to be trying to do with the Common Core is you're going to do the same thing across the entire country. Where in Texas we've said no, we're going to do it. We're going to do our own state assessments. We're going to do our own curriculum. It's an argument of federal getting into state. It's an argument of the federal government telling the states what they're supposed to do, and that's this hasn't flown in Texas. And so when you begin to look at Common Core, you see that it's not as wide, if you will, as some that don't have Common Core. The curriculum is not as long. It's a little bit more short, not as many things covered.
What's missing?
In the Common Core?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a little bit shorter, then what do you, I mean, is there an easy answer there?
No, I don't think there's an easy answer. I think it goes back to who's driving the curriculum. I think it goes back to who's actually devising the curriculum. There are people and there are bills out right now in Texas that are saying we want to reduce the number of student expectations and TEKS, if you will, in Texas. And we're for that, too. But as far as that goes, it's who's driving the curriculum, who's making the curriculum. And when you don't really know who that person is from the federal government, Texas doesn't want to do that. And I wouldn't either.
All right, so let's go back to this, at least what we've got here in Texas now. Texas Association of School Administrators met in Austin. I think you were probably at that meeting there.
I was.
And there was a lot of talk about additional teacher training for math. And that's great, but there and again, even teachers who've been teaching math for a long time are going to be challenged by this. And there are holes right now in math curriculum for kids in lower grades. And I really strongly believe you've got to have the strongest foundation in third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade till you get to algebra. Because if you're not there when algebra hits, you're in trouble for the rest of your educational career.
Oh, yes. You have, with the new assessment coming out, you have, and the new standards, you have more student expectations that students are supposed to have now in math than they've ever had before. The problem with that is they say that we need more training. Well, when is that training going to be offered? Who's going to pay for it? And you have to weigh out. If the training is during the school day in Austin or even here, we still have to have the training. Who's going to provide it? And then the teachers are out of the classroom to go get the training to come back to teach the children. And the teachers need to be in the classroom with the children. And you have identified about 55% more student expectations in math right now in sixth grade than what they had the previous year. So there's a huge learning gap there. So, for example, if a fifth grade student, and the reason I know this, Scott, I have a sixth grade student.
Okay.
So as a fifth grade child, my child personally met all those standards as a fifth grader, did well on the math EOC, missed one question. He goes to sixth grade the next year. Now, as a parent, you're looking at this going, my child has done very well in fifth grade. They go to sixth grade because they've added 55% new student expectations, which puts you in algebra already into sixth grade. My child and any other child who did well in fifth grade going into sixth grade is already behind.
There's that gap,
there's
that hole right there.
That instructional gap that's there that we have to make up. And then on top of it, by the end of this school year, or really in the spring, our kids are given a state-mandated test over this material where there was that instructional gap that they'd never had that information, and we've had to, again, fly very quickly over a curriculum to get our kids supposedly caught up, if you will, to where those TEKS were for the sixth grade classes. So there's a frustration on parents. There's a frustration by administrators, and there's really a frustration with our teachers that you've gone from one year to the next and you've added 55% new TEKS to that sixth grade year. That's tough.
Yeah, what I have in front of me says, for instance, more than half of this year's sixth graders are expected to learn what was taught in last year in seventh grade, and about 40% of this year's third grade requirements weren't in the standards at all. But TEKS in higher grades assumes that students have covered this material.
And so
how can we accept teaks in this form if you know that there's a gap back there?
I completely agree. And so what we're not getting, there's no buy-in. There's no collegiality. There's no collaboration, really, between what's going on in Austin with this curriculum being driven and what's going on in the classroom. You know, the teachers are the ones who teach. The teachers are the ones that know where the kids are. But when you get a curriculum that's mandated to you, and then if we don't follow it, then I'll be talking to you about accountability ratings.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? Yeah. And then you look at that and you think, well, darn, 55% new teaks in just and that's just sixth grade. We're not even gone into third grade, fourth grade, right. Fifth grade. I mean, we haven't even gone into those. And then to get the children ready for the sixth grade teaks, we're changing teaks in kindergarten. They've changed teaks in first grade and second grade. So the whole process is making the students to where, or the teacher, excuse me, to where they're just staying barely one step ahead of what's coming down from the state. And then from the professional development standpoint, how much time do we spend giving these teachers the materials that they need to teach these? How much time? You have a 7-period day in middle school. They have one conference period. Some might have some teaming. We've done some teaming. But you don't have the time to study the teaks in order to teach them to the depth and the complexity to pass a test. And then if they don't do well on the test, we're talking about accountability ratings.
Boy, it sounds like a great commercial for school vouchers or some sort of non-traditional educational system. Tommy Wallace, the superintendent of Bryan, joining us. Let's take now. Let's go over and let's shift down to back local, because a lot of things obviously are happening in BISD. You got your bond issue passed. You've got a guy now heading up your construction. Let's talk a little bit about who he is, and so people will know that.
Jeff Windsor is coming to us from Spring ISD. Well over 30 years experience in construction. He has headed up all the bonds, last three bonds from Spring ISD. All but one of them were still larger than the one we did in Bryan. Got a very good vita in terms of what he can do. He's going to bring a lot of expertise. He's going to bring a lot of resources to us. We can turn a lot of this project over to a guy that knows school business, knows school construction. So we're looking forward to having him. He starts Friday. Actually starts tomorrow, so we're looking forward to having him. He's already been in, looked at the plans, looked at the program, asked a lot of good questions, already working with the architect, talked with him. So I think we're really going to have a good product at the end of the bond with somebody like Jeff Windsor and his expertise heading it up.
Hammond Oliver was revolutionary when it started. You've decided to make some changes there. In the first 2 years, the kiddos will remain on their individual campuses rather than be on a common campus. At least according to the newspaper story over the weekend, some pushback from some of the students saying that you're going to lose some of that feel that you have because they're going to be on really three different locations rather than just one.
Yes. Well, you know, we appreciate the students and their voices. We like that. We're glad that we'd like to hear what they have to say. The thing about it is when they came to us, what the ones that were voicing their concerns, I don't think they were given all the information up front, probably the way we should have given it to them. The kids that are in 10th grade, 11th grade, and 12th grade for next school year, nothing changes for them. We're not changing the rules middle of the game like the Texas does for us. We're not letting them do that. They're going to continue to have the same program they've always had. It starts with the incoming freshmen because currently what you do is you go through Hammond Oliver, which is a fantastic program. I want to make it very clear. It's not going away. It's just Hammond Oliver version 2.0. We're going to make it to where Hammond Oliver has more certifications, where you have not just CNA, but then we're start working on your RN. You can start working on that. You can work on phlebotomy, EMT. You can get certifications in all of these areas, and your clinicals are going to be more open, more broad. Instead of just saying you can pick one or two, we're going to open it up to you where you can get a lot of experience in a lot of different areas and a lot more certifications. You can get a CNA certification, say at Blinn, and you can get that in roughly 3-4 months. So we're going to continue the CNA program at Hammond Oliver.
Okay, what is CNA so people understand?
That is Certified Nurses Assistant.
Okay.
And so with that, we want to continue to get students and have students 21st century ready, post-high school ready. So CNA will continue, but then we're also going to have the areas of billing, phlebotomy, EMT, other certifications out there as well. So we're just going to ramp it up in terms of certifications.
Okay. And then, you know, I don't want to dive really deep into this, but I do at least want to get your comments because you've gotten your report back from the Patel Group having to do with pay. That's for people who came from the career ladder. Let me ask you right up front, how is this set up different than the career ladder that some older teachers have been in?
It's a little different. The career ladder went back to how a person did in their evaluation. And if that one individual who did the observation thought the person did well, they did got a great evaluation, they got money. It's a little different. This is something that's coming from the state of Texas. We want to be on the cutting edge of this. We want to look into this. This was a board-driven decision. And Battelle for Kids is where we're putting our money into, say, a teacher that teaches all EOC courses, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. If you teach a STAR-tested or EOC-tested subject, one of the recommendations from the committee was that you would get an additional stipend for those things. So if you're not an EOC-tested subject or a STAR-tested subject, you wouldn't get that stipend because there's a lot of pressure on teachers who have to teach and perform on this test, and more so than those teachers who aren't teaching a STAR-tested test. So that's one of the recommendations from the committee was to give them a stipend, if you will, for STAR-tested subjects. One of the other recommendations from the committee was that we would, if you're in a campus or work in a campus that is a hard-to-fill campus or a at-risk campus, a really at-risk campus, there might be an additional stipend as well. And that's in be a lot of different phases, but the first phase we would look into is the phase of giving individuals stipends that teach the STAR test or teach to the STAR test or teach for the STAR test, that's what I should say.
Okay.
And then the individuals who are hard to fill spaces.
Now, the bottom line, and I'm glad the school board has something to be excited about, but I mean the bottom line is then again how are we paying for this and what kind of a financial impact is this going to cause on the school district?
And that's where we're at in our financial discussions right now. So the board will have to decide from our presentations to them, our recommendations to them, how much money do you want to put into this? Because you have a couple choices. You can say we're going to put just X amount of dollars in it, and then whoever qualifies qualifies. Or you can put in for we're going to put in a certain amount of money, and let me back up. And then if you have a certain amount of money for, and then who qualifies gets the money. Or you can say, well, if they don't qualify, we're going to put in less money. It's a complicated thing as far as to explain on the radio how we're going to do it, but it's really a situation where the board has to decide, we have to decide how much money will be put in that, and that's the money that's going to have to be to stay put.
I guess what the listener wants to know is what's that number?
Well, we're working on that. We're not done because we've been working on this 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
We're not to that final number yet. We've just taken it back to the school board to give them the first round of conversation. The second round of this is what they call a red team, where community members come in. We talk about the plan. They redlined it. Then we took it to the school board. The school board has now heard it. They're offering suggestions. And now what we do is we come back with a final number, and the board will either approve it, say add more to, take away from, and where this will fall on our budget, which, again, makes it difficult considering we don't know what money is going to come from the state of Texas.
Finally, kind of as an overview on this, I sense that Michael Williams does not speak for everyone who is in school administration as our education secretary here in Texas. What does the future hold at I don't want to say a confrontational situation, but obviously a lot of people who are administrators are not happy with teachers are not happy with what's going on in Austin.
Well, Commissioner Williams has come in under Governor Perry's watch and has made it clear that he is for vouchers. He is for, it seems to be, additional testing. He is the Commissioner of Education, and he has to look out for all areas. And it's not just Texas public education. It is vouchers. It is public schools. Or it is homeschools. And he is the Commissioner of all, and he has to look out for the best interests of everybody. But there is a feeling out there that maybe Commissioner Williams isn't as pro-public education is what most public education would like.
Be a lot of people watching Texas, that's for sure.
There will be.
Thank you for the time this
morning.
Scott,
thank you very much.
You bet. We've been talking to Dr. Tommy Wallace, who's the superintendent of Bryan ISD. The entire interview will be archived on our website at WTAW.com.
Are you looking for an experienced insurance company? Van Dyke Rankin, headquartered in Brenham, with new offices on the North Earl Rudder Freeway and Bryan, offers full-service lines, including coverage for your business, home, auto, and health. Call Van Dyke Rankin and Bryan at 846-8500 or visit their website at VanDykeRankin.com. Get a comparison quote and be on your way to a win-win relationship with Van Dyke Rankin, a trusted insurance agency committed to integrity, honesty, and doing it right. Call 846-8500 to find out if Van Dyke Rankin and Company is right for you.
Newstalk 1620 WTAW in the studio with Adam Snido from BTU, and you guys have a lot planned that you normally do day-to-day business, but you're doing something with the Home and Garden Show this year.
Absolutely. So this weekend we'll be at the Expo Center from Saturday and Sunday. We're going to have a booth there. We'll be available to answer people's questions, talk about energy efficiency, but more importantly, we're going to hand out the beloved 2015 BTU Kids Calendars.
That's awesome, but you also have to find someplace that's got the rulers. Everybody always has the yardsticks. I don't know why that's at a home show thing, but it always is. And
we
you guys have some. Do you really?
We have some. We'll have some there for you.
I knew it.
And the reason we have them kind of leads me into my next thing is we have them for Smart Home. We'll be there to promote our Smart Home program. You know, we're kind of coming out of that winter season or moving into spring, get ready for summer. And so we want to remind people that we have this program where you can upgrade your windows, you can upgrade your insulation, you can put solar screens on predominantly east and west facing windows. All of that is designed to help you save money, live more comfortably, but we will have rulers there because we have to measure what your current level of insulation is in your attic. And so if you're thinking about taking advantage of that program and looking at upgrading, man, we've got a ruler that you can take home with you so you can get an idea of what your R value is.
Now, this can be a strange question because I know you're in Bryan and that's where the program is. But does it also work if you're like I am, you live out in Welburn and you have BTU?
As long as you are a BTU customer, you are eligible. You are right. We do cover we have two systems, basically a city and a rural. So we service the city limits of Bryan, but we also have the surrounding parts outside, you know, surrounding parts of Brazos Valley outside the city limits of College Station. So if you live out in Welborn, if you live way, way south towards Milliken, but you're a BTU customer, man, you are eligible.
Where can they go get more information?
Absolutely. Always check out our website at www.btutilities.com. Click on the Smart Home link. It'll give you all the information available.
Thank you, Adam. Appreciate you taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Introducing the new Subway Simple 6 menu. Six of our best 6-inch subs, now in made just for you meals for just $6 every day.
I got it made fresh at Subway.
Take your pick from six of our best subs, like the Italian BMT, tender turkey breast, sweet onion chicken teriyaki, and more. With a 21-ounce drink and a bag of chips, the new Simple 6 menu is value made simple every day. Yeah, you so got it made.
Subway.
Prices and participation may vary. Additional charges for extras. Plus tax. See stores for menu selections. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii.
One taste of our tender new Subway grilled chicken strips made with no artificial preservatives or flavors, and you'll see we're really
cranking it up, shifting into high gear, and totally breaking through. Oof. I'm okay.
Oh, it's breakthrough, all right. New Subway grilled chicken strips. They taste better and they are better. Premium cut all-white meat with no artificial preservatives or flavors. Try our new grilled chicken strips in the new Monterey Chicken Melt today. Subway, eat fresh.
The Aggie Report is next.
The Learfield Sports Directors Cup honors the nation's best overall collegiate athletic program in each division, men's and women's sports. The prestigious award continues its reign as the crowning achievement in college athletics, noting the remarkable efforts of student athletes and their institutions. To follow your favorite team, like us on Facebook, find us in USA Today, online, and on Twitter at LS Directors Cup. Over two decades of excellence, the Learfield Sports Director's Cup.
And tapped it to Caruso on the other side. Caruso goes down and a little floater got the layup. Good. 15:46 to go. Aggies have the lead 38-36. But A&M would not get the win last night. Georgia over the Aggs by a final score of 62-53. A&M now 16-7 for the season in an SEC play at 7-4. Identical record in SEC play for Georgia. They're 7-4. And a record like the Aggies at 16-7. The line for A&M was Alex Caruso with 20 points last night, along with 6 rebounds and 4 assists, and played a team high of 36 minutes. Matter of fact, more minutes than anybody else in the ball game, but 20 points. The only other double-figure scorer for the Aggies was Daniel House, who had 14. A&M was down at halftime in the game, 34-31. Well, coming up next for the Aggs will be the game on Saturday against Florida. It will be played at Reed. It's the second of 3 home games in a row. That one will tip at 5:30. We'll have the broadcast on this radio station starting at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Make plans to join the team at Reed coming up on Saturday for tickets. 1-888-99-AGGIE, 1-888-99-AGGIE for tickets to that one. That's the Nagy Report, and I'm Dave South.
Congratulations to Cornerstone Home Health, voted Best Home Health Agency in the 2014 Best of the Brazos. Cornerstone Home Health provides an effective continuum of care at home, from skilled nursing and therapists to loving caregivers to help with bathing, companionship, med management, Alzheimer's care, and more. Cornerstone Home Health brings many of the services offered in a hospital or nursing home to individuals in their own homes. Call Anthony Fava, Texas A&M Class of 06, for a free consultation, 776-5620. Cornerstone Home Health.
WTAW News Time is 8:41. It's 46 degrees right now at the studios. We'll take a look at your forecast coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Patrick Zeiner. Texas A&M Interim President Mark Hussey is giving new President Michael Young an additional $8 million for academic-related expenses. A university news release says the money is coming from the elimination of vacant non-faculty positions. System Chancellor John Sharp gave a heads-up to the Faculty Senate earlier this week.
This is the most efficient government agency in the state of Texas. Forget university. 3.6% administrative overhead at Texas A&M University. And Thursday, you're going to see the president take some action that's even going to make that more important. And all of that money is going to be put into a fund for academic excellence by the president, to be used by the president and the provost, presumably in this case the new president and provost.
Dr. Hussey also told top administrators and deans there will be strict procedures for filling any future non-faculty positions. None of the lost jobs are housed or located in academic departments. WTAW News has asked for a list of the positions that have been eliminated. After 3 confirmed diagnoses of Ebola last year, state legislators created a bill to increase the level of preparedness in responding to infectious disease threats based on recommendations by the Texas Task Force for Infectious Disease Preparedness and Response.
Senator Charles Schwertner and CEO of the Texas A&M Health Science Center, Brett Jouar, who heads the task force, spoke to the media Wednesday about the new legislation, which addresses any infectious disease threat.
This bill, although based on the Ebola emergency, is not an Ebola bill. This is preparation for any infectious disease emergency in the future.
Dr. Jouar says among new provisions, the state's chief physician could issue a control order for an exposed or infectious person to stay in their home before the control order is broken. This is currently not the case.
Inappropriate authorities can temporarily detain a person who is mentally ill, who is at risk of harming someone else. This is done on a regular basis. Now, in contrast, even the state's top doctor can't enforce a person staying in the home who's potentially infectious with Ebola.
Jouar says other provisions include increasing the protectiveness of emergency responders and enabling the governor to declare a state of infectious disease emergency. Chelsea Reber, News Talk 1620, WTAW.
Flu activity in Brazos County continues to run well ahead of those afflicted last year. The latest update from the health department shows 134 cases during the week ending February 7. That's compared to 68 the year before. The last 4 weeks, the health department has had 821 flu cases compared to 235 the same period in 2014. Since the start of flu season last October, there have been more than 2,300 cases, which is an increase of more than 800 from last year. Earlier this week, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick announced his intent to keep Texas National Guard troops along the Mexico border past March. State Representative John Rainey, a member of the House Appropriations Committee, says the proposed budget includes $418 million for the Guard.
What we're trying to determine now, whether it'd be better to spend money increasing the number of DPS officers who have more authority, or continue to use the Guard, and it's just a big question, which is the best way to go.
The Lieutenant Governor's plan to keep the Guard on the border through May is projected to cost $814 million. Bryan Police has issued an advisory about door-to-door solicitors following several complaints about salesmen acting suspiciously. Officer Kelly McKeithen says if any salespeople come to your door and you don't want to deal with them, but they won't go away, call police immediately.
Yeah, call us immediately. Sometimes even burglars will go and knock on a door and to see if you're home. So just to prevent that from happening, you know, if someone's knocking on your door and you're trying to ignore them and they won't go away, contact us.
McKeithen says on Tuesday, officers contacted a group of individuals who were selling magazines without a permit. She says the group left and so far has not applied for a city permit. More tips to deal with solicitors from Bryan Police are online at WTAW.com. Two roommates are the third and fourth arrests from a series of convenience store armed robberies in Bryan last month. 20-year-old Jonathan Lett and 18-year-old William Dates are accused of participating in a holdup at Palace Soda Grocery. Lett was also arrested for a holdup at Sodalax Grocery. Both are being held in the Brazos County Jail across Sandy Point Road from their home. Last month, a 16-year-old was arrested for his involvement at Palace Soda, Sodalax, and the Handy Stop on West William Joel Bryan, and a 17-year-old was arrested for being the gunman in the Handy Stop robbery. Investigators say additional charges may be filed on all four. WTAW News Time is 8:45. It's 47 degrees. We'll have more news for you today at noon with Chelsea Reber or anytime on our website, WTAW.com. I'm Patrick Zeinert, News Talk 1620, WTAW.
Dayhill, a Xerox company, is the leader in business solutions for over 20 years. We're more than just copiers. Let the Dayhill team help you create document and content management in a safe and secure environment that will store and retrieve your important data quickly. Whether you're looking for copy equipment, managed print services, IT solutions, or fax and scan services, let the local Dayhill sales team help you find the perfect solution with our Dayhill 360 assessment. Local service, local sales, local knowledge is Dayhill's customer service commitment to you. Contact Dayhill locally today, 774-2200, or at dayhill.com.
Hi, this is Levi Douglas from Douglas Nissan. You know us as home of the nice guys. Let us show you why. We're not into high-pressure sales, but we are into finding you the right vehicle at a nice guy price. That's why our customers drive away happy and keep coming back to us again and again. Douglas Nissan on Highway 6 at University Drive.
Hi, I'm Brian Windham.
And I'm Allison Windham.
And we're Windham Construction.
Remodeling is a story. It has a beginning, middle, and an end. The beginning is planning and design, the middle, quality construction, and the end, your happily ever after. If you're ready to write your story, we can help you get it done. Windham Construction provides good quality, dependability, and great results. Whether you want to remodel your kitchen or build an addition, it's a great time to get started. Call us today. Windham Construction, 324-8596.
847, our Brazos Valley weather. Weather forecast is brought to you by Peach Creek Vineyards and Winery. Enjoy fine local wines in a peaceful country setting just south of College Station. Visit peachcreekvineyards.com. I'm just going to read you the weather because, you know, it's already out there and we've been living with it for a few hours today. Look for a high temperature today. Again, sunshine, which is nice. We're going to get up to 58 degrees and the wind's going to probably kick up to about 20 miles an hour or so. Tonight, mostly clear and a low temperature around 37, northeasterly winds at 5 to 10. And then on Friday, we're looking at sunny skies, about 61 or so. 75 on Saturday ought to be good. 66 on Sunday, and then Sunday night, 40% chance of rain and a 40% chance of rain on Monday, which is President's Day, which is a door rattler for some people. Wind chill right now is 38. Winds are out of the north at 13, so just say. All right, so if you think you're doing a restaurant favors by ordering dessert, that may not be the case. Dessert can be delicious, of course, and it can be profitable too, but generally speaking, when diners extend their meal with slices of whatever or cups of whatever or servings of whatever, it can come at the restaurant's expense. Tyler Cowan, who's an economics professor at George Mason University, has written extensively about the economics of eating out. He says there are many problems having to do with dessert, but it all starts with one pretty simple truth, and that is the restaurant industry is a place that has pretty thin margins to deal with, and dessert tends to offer one of the thinnest. He says that there is a limit to how much people are willing to pay for different parts of the meal. For many mid-scale restaurants, that limit is $30 for entrees, no matter the ingredients. A mid-scale restaurant is $30 for an entree?
That's probably going to be your steak dishes.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
For desserts, the ceiling is much lower, and it is much less flexible. Desserts of good ingredients, quite often, should be much more expensive. In fact, really good desserts should cost even $20.
Wow.
But folks can't conceive. I mean, can you conceive of spending that?
No.
If I'm getting a dessert that expensive, I'm going for the dessert.
Right. Yes. You're right. It's part of the overall experience. But that's also where you get the $7 cup of coffee.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, it's all part of the experience, well,
that's
if
just,
you will.
That's just Wednesday to Starbucks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, yeah, like, yeah. Three extra words on the name of the coffee. Okay. Anyway, so now, did we hear about this haunted Apple MacBook thing?
No.
All right. Most people would only be willing to shell out a few bucks for a laptop that's already a decade old, yet there are bidders who are trying to become the proud owner of a 2007 Apple MacBook. It's haunted. Let's see what the bid is right now. If you'll Google haunted Mac, I'm sure.
What does it do?
Well, the original owner of the MacBook reportedly believes that it became haunted when he forgot it in a graveyard next to an abandoned mental hospital all night by an accident. Yeah.
Come on.
Let's build up whatever that might
be. You said this is the 2007 one?
2007 Apple. Oh, as opposed to the 2009 one, which is haunted?
No, I'm...
Yeah, haunted MacBook?
Yeah, it's over.
Oh, it's done? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, how much did they get for it?
I thought it would say.
Okay.
The starting bid was $75, and that one didn't go. We can't be talking about the same one.
This says $368.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Okay, the original owner reportedly believes... Okay. Because he was sketching gravestones and brought the laptop with him to play music. When he returned to the graveyard to retrieve his MacBook... He said it was still open and playing music. It was when he took the laptop home that, quote, things started to happen that were downright weird. First, he says, I noticed all of my songs in iTunes had become scary and haunted. Second, the desktop background was changed to a scary photo, end quote. Poltergeist activity was reported, too. The seller reports returning home with his wife only to find his collection of baseball cards all out of order. Yeah. And to make things spookier, I occasionally saw the computer levitating. Occasionally? Honey, it's levitating again. In some cases, the screen and the keyboard would open and shut quickly as though the computer were attempting to speak. I apologize that I spent a minute and a half on that story that we'll never get back. But
it was like it was talking to me, man.
Great products and great information from the Pool Store. The Pool Store offers free computerized water analysis, free in-store labor on items like pool cleaners, even free delivery to your home. The Pool Store staff will help you maintain your swimming pool, advise you when there's a problem, and help you get the right item at the right price. The Pool Store is local, Aggie-owned, and will always meet or beat any competitor's price in town. And the Tower Point Shopping Center, corner of Highway 6 and William D. Fitch, Pool Store, open 7 days a week. The Pool Store by the Pool Guy.
Ready to make the commitment to be healthier, to be stronger, to feel better? Then here's the number to call. 693-6100. That's Super Slow Zone. You know the slogan, minutes a week, in shape for life. And that's exactly what it's all about. You stop in, try the machines out. They have some new machines as they've changed their location. They're still right there on Rock Prairie Road in the medical complex by the Med, but they're now in the West Side building right there on the first floor. But they're pieces of equipment they haven't had before. And as a result, you go in, you try the equipment out, you find what you're looking for in exercise. Then they take a brief medical history, and you're on your way. 693-6100. You're on your way to a healthier you so that you can feel better every day. You go and you work out a couple of times a week. After a while, it shifts down to one time a week. But what you always get is attention, one-on-one work. That's what makes Super Slow Zone different. Minutes a week in shape for life. Call them at 693-6100, Super Slow Zone.
What if you could go back and relive the music of the world's most celebrated band? Rain, a tribute to the Beatles, featuring new songs and spectacular high-definition imagery. Don't miss the Broadway smash that's taken the world by storm. Rain, a tribute to the Beatles.
Presented by MSC Opus February 13th in Rutter Auditorium. Sponsored by Bluebell Creameries. Call 845-1234.
And here he comes.
It's the Crawfish Man.
He's a crawfish man. Take his hand.
I'm your crawfish man.
That's right. Crawfish to Go is the home of Boudreaux, the crawfish man. On the weekend, look for us in Bryan at that Exxon store, Boonville at Briarcrest, right across the street from Allen Academy. Crawfishes, shrimps, filet, gumbo, and more. Call 406-2222.
I'm your crawfish man.
On that computer, crawfishtogo.com.
News Talk 1620 WTAW.
I found it, and it was the one I was looking at earlier.
Okay, all right.
And it apparently got up over $3,000, but the listing was removed due to an error in the description. And the same story in the New York Daily News leads me to believe this guy was just in it for a Josh.
Oh, all right.
Because he put a pin inside the...
I had some chocolate statistics here. Yeah, I'll be able to find them tomorrow. Well, I mean, you know, we know Valentine's Day is coming up. Anyway, British researchers have answered the eternal question, how exactly does popcorn pop? New study says that researchers recorded the popcorn popping process using high-speed cameras to understand its precise mechanics, which io9.com says has long been shrouded in mystery?
I don't think so
no, either.
The steam explodes,
right?
Blah, blah.
But here's it. When the inside of the popcorn kernel reaches the boiling point, three things happen simultaneously. First, the vapor pressure inside the kernel causes the hull to break. At the same time, the kernel's starch granules expand without losing heat to form that delicious flake that we know. And the popcorn jumps, and the mouth-watering pop noise is emitted. Scientists also zeroed in on the temperature most likely to result in the fewest unpopped kernels. The heat test revealed that 96% of all kernels will pop at 180 degrees Celsius. Okay, 180 Celsius. I don't know what that is, Fahrenheit. Why didn't they give it to me in Fahrenheit? I guess they did it in
British research. That's probably close.
Okay. Now, what we really need to know is why do snap, crackle, and pop do that? I find that to be far more fascinating than that other thing.
Do you not have the answer?
I don't know. No, what is it?
Then how dare you bring that up?
Oh! No,
if
I don't.
If you don't know why it snap, crackles, and pop, don't bring it up so I got to sit here and think about that.
We used to call that stupid trivia when we'd ask a question that we didn't know the answer to. How about Netflix? Way to go.
Oh, yeah. Get on that.
Golly! They did accidentally post 10 episodes of House of Cards third season 2 weeks ahead of schedule.
Oops.
I'd have captured those if I could have. The release date is Friday.
Yeah, a lot of spoiler alerts floating around out
there. Are there, really? Yeah. Feb 27. Well, I'm not going to look at them because I like that show.
Uh-huh.
News of the leak slammed social media. Mere minutes after the leak was reported, Netflix solved the problem and viewers who attempted to get a jump on that binge-watching for Season 3 were met with a screen which said, watch Season 3 on February 27th. The official the official House of Cards Twitter maintained a sense of humor about the incident, posting the following message, this is Washington, there's always a leak. All 13 episodes will launch on February the 27th. Ben & Jerry's has released its final Saturday Night Live-inspired ice cream, Wayne Swirled, based on the classic Saturday Night Live sketch, the newest SNL-inspired ice cream flavor. Let's see what we got. The new variety combines dark caramel and vanilla ice cream with caramel and fudge swirls in an ode to the now undeniably recognizable brunette and blonde mullet wigs worn by Mike Myers and Dana Carvey that they brought them to life. So there you go. Their name was Wayne Campbell and Garth Algar, if you don't remember that. I don't think I'd remembered their last names. Bob Simon was killed in a traffic accident last night.
Yeah, I saw that.
He was in a Lincoln Town Car, I guess driving home or to something else, and it appears to have been the driver's fault that what happened, and ran into the back of another car, hit a concrete abutment. So he was killed last night. I think Scott Pelley broke in to regular programming to let people know about that. But rather surprising, probably saw him on 60 Minutes. This guy won a ton of Emmy Awards. I don't have the number right in front of me.
He was one of my favorites, that's for sure.
Yeah, 72 years old, and again, just an amazing number of Emmys. All right, let's see, on this date in history, in 1879 at New York's Madison Square Garden, the first artificial ice rink in North America opened. 1909, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, NAACP, was formed.
And they've never changed their name.
They haven't. 1924, Calvin Coolidge became the first president of U.S. America to speak on the radio, delivered a political speech. 1999, President Bill Clinton acquitted by the United States Senate on his impeachment trial. Big day for him. And in 2001, a federal appeals court ruled that the internet service known as Napster. Remember Napster?
Yes.
Federal judge appeals court ruled that Napster could not allow users to swap copyrighted music without charge. Huh. That's where it all started. Back tomorrow. It's 9 o'clock. WGAW. College Station Friday.